And now, This Day in American History with President Donald J. Trump.
Hello, my fellow Americans. Today is May 10th, Cinco de Mayo, President's Day, when we celebrate President Andrew Jackson, great president, one of my favorite founding fathers, who kept the Native American white people safe from the Mexicans sneaking across our border, founded the great state of Nashville, which I got to visit recently, lovely place, wanted to stop the Civil War, but it turns out he couldn't because he was dead. You know, I love our presidents, especially the current one, but not so much Alexander Hamilton, who is not a good president. I don't even know why he is on the $20 bill. Should be Jackson. Wrong. His people were not very nice to a very good man recently. My vice president, Jesus-y Jesus man. Bad, sick. Do you know that Abraham Lincoln was a Republican? Most people don't know that, but he was. Very good man. Would have prevented the Civil War, but then he was shot by Susan Rice, probably working for Crooked Hillary, we still don't know, investigate, while crossing the Delaware Water Gap, which started the Civil War because the Northern aggressors fired missiles at Fort something. All because the freedom-loving people in the South didn't want to pay unfair taxes, so they dumped all the coffee into Baltimore Harbor. Bad, sick. My favorite president is Ronald Reagan. He is the only president to have served more than two terms because the people loved him so much, just like they do Donald J. Trump. He won the Great War, World War II, by inventing the nuclear bomb, great tool, and dropping it on the evil Germans. Then he saved the island of Bermuda from a communist takeover. Great place, Bermuda. I go there a lot to visit my money. President Reagan made the country great again by fixing our finances before Crooked Hillary's evil, evil husband came in and spent all our money. Bad president, Bill Clinton. That's why they threw him out of office. I don't like Democrat presidents, except like my Fox friends, for Richard Nixon. Good man, very misunderstood. Victim of the liberal fake news media that made up stories about something he did with his dog. Not many people know this, but Richard Nixon also invented the game of shuffleboard. We have great shuffleboard at Mar-a-Lago, right by all of our many wonderful, wonderful pools. The best, the best. Though it is not a well-known fact that a 32-point shot in shuffleboard is not possible, cannot happen. I did it twice. Take it from me, Donald Trump. If Donald Trump says it, you can set it in stone. Well, that's all the 150 characters we have for today. Next week, we will talk about some great living Americans to watch out for, like this young Freddie Douglass, who I think is a real up-and-comer.
It's time for Forward Nation Radio. Now here he is, the host of Forward Nation Radio, David Leventhal.
Welcome to Forward Nation Radio with me, David Leventhal, and a very badly impersonated President Donald J. Trump. On today's show, we are back in the studio. Hope you enjoyed our live show last week. We've got the dead show again this week. On today's show, we will start, as we always do, with a brief discussion, or not so brief, of the news. We will then take some listener questions, and we will be discussing the latest Russia news, and if we have time, the Trump legacy, what he has already accomplished. Okay, let's get into the news. Starting right off, the big news of the day, late breaking news, is the firing of FBI Director James Comey. We will have more on this story after the news and after the listener questions. It will be the first story that we delve into deeply. Also, just to briefly mention, the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, publicly called for a government shutdown. Government shutdowns are not good things. We talked about it a little bit last week or the week before. I'm a little torn here, because the first time I've ever thought that a government shutdown didn't sound like such a terrible idea was when we had a government led by Donald J. Trump and the Republican Party. Well, other big news. Healthcare is back on. The House has passed its new version of the American Health Care Act, the new health care bill. And all across the world, people are rising up and saying, why the hell did you do this? What was the point of this? We're not going to discuss the bill because the bill that they passed is so awful, it's apparently dead in the water, even among Senate Republicans, who said, yeah, we're not passing the House bill. So more on this as the Senate tries to cobble something together and then work out differences with the House. But the question still comes up, especially comes up under the circumstances. Why did they do this? Well, I guess it's an easy call to make if you believe, like Republican Congressman Raul Labrador of Idaho, with any luck, soon to be former Republican Congressman Raul Labrador, nobody has ever died from lack of access to health care. That's what he said at a town hall meeting. I expect some of you have seen the clips of that. The good news is he got roundly booed, basically booed off the stage. He's been hiding ever since, and in fact has led to the brilliant optics, the wonderful marketing ploy of the Democratic Party to send neighboring congressmen who are Democrats into the neighboring districts where Republicans are hiding under their desks from their constituents, many of whom they've just voted to kill, and that we will go and explain to your constituents what this is all about and what you were thinking of. I love the optics of that, and I hope it comes to pass. Nobody has ever died from lack of access to health care. Why was he booed for that statement? Well, a recent study by the American Journal of Public Health, as was reported on this show recently, affiliated with Harvard Medical School, it's found that in 2009, before the implementation of Obamacare, almost 45,000 Americans died each year for lack of access to health care. I'm going to pause for a second and just let that sink in. 45,000 Americans. That is more than 15 9/11s. 9/11 prompted us in our anger to lash out at the rest of the world, including people who had done nothing to hurt us, killing civilians, violating international law, becoming the world's foremost practitioner and apologist for torture. But apparently 15 times that number of dead Americans each year is just a Republican talking point. So why did they pass this awful bill? In addition to the picture of Raul Labrador getting booed off the stage and Republicans cowering under their desks, I love the image of Democrats in Congress singing to the Republicans, na 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 na, na 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 na, hey, 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 goodbye. Sorry, I sing about as well as I do Trump impersonations, but you get the point. With a bill this unpopular, did the Republicans in the House, as gerrymandered as it is it possible that they still managed to put a nail in their own coffin? Well, presumably they all figure that by the time the election comes a year and a half from now, they will be able to have changed the subject multiple times, and their average constituent, who has an attention span of about 15 seconds, will have moved on to various other things that Fox News has made up. But there's more to it than that. Clearly, this was not motivated to help America. So what was the motivation? This really says something about the people running this country. Donald Trump's motivation was to say he did it. I promised that we'd pass a bill repealing Obamacare, and at least we got it done in the House. We got it done in the House, so if it fails in the Senate, I can blame that on Democrats. I could say the Senate is barely Republican. It's the Democrats who stopped this. It won't be true, but it doesn't matter. We'll just blame it all on the Democrats, and we'll get out of this. But I will be able to say, I did it. Let's move on with my agenda. I think a similar motivation applies to Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, who also has never shown the slightest inclination to worry about the health or well-being of his constituents or anybody in America. Paul Ryan was taking a lot of grief for being an ineffective Speaker of the House, a guy who'd much prefer spending his time in the gym and on the cover of GQ than actually managing the House of Representatives, or at least his party in the House of Representatives. Well, now Paul Ryan gets to say, I did it. And in fact, his boasting becomes all the better because what he did was so unbelievably awful that it takes a real good leader to herd his posse to do something this bad. We will obviously have more on this story as it develops over time. But this is really pathetic. Also in the news, on a lighter front, the French election. Yes, we headed off right-wing populism. The people of France once again demonstrated their intellectual superiority to Americans. At least that according to humorist Andy Borowitz, who had a great piece in The New Yorker about, as he often does, about French now being able to continue saying we are intellectually superior to Americans. Well, they've earned that right. He also points out in his piece, however, that that's setting an awfully low bar, and there's not necessarily a whole lot of satisfaction among the French, because proving yourself intellectually superior to Americans is kind of like outsmarting your dog. It's probably just not that satisfying. And when I say Americans, of course, I don't mean all of us. Certainly, I don't mean you, the listener of Forward Nation Radio. You know who I'm referring to. What was also interesting about the French election, stemming the tide of right-wing racist populism by giving Marine Le Pen a stunning loss, far worse than was predicted, was the extent to which it followed the pattern in the United States presidential election. There was, in fact, massive hacking of Emmanuel Macron, the newly elected president of France, and his people. And the results of that hacking was dumped on the French people right before the election. And what was the result of all that massive hacking? Well, those French people who got word of it apparently yawned and said, here we go again, bullshit from Ivan from Russia and whatever right-wing jackasses are doing this in France. Contrast that with the United States, where the hacking of Hillary Clinton and her emails and her staff's emails prior to the election apparently resulted in a big change in voting patterns. In France, that hacking was met with silence, disdain, and scorn. Someone in the French media was quoted as saying, well, we're different than you. We don't have a Fox News in France. And thus, once again, demonstrate their intellectual superiority. This relates back to things that we've talked about in this program already. What to do about free speech, fake news? Well, it turns out that France has far more restrictions on free speech than America does. They understand that the marketplace in ideas is a wonderful thing, but that doesn't change the fact that fake news can lead to bad decisions. France limits the use of fake news, and in fact, reports indicate that the election commissioner warned the media when the hacking came up that if this stuff is all proven to be wrong and they're running these stories, then they could be held accountable. maybe there is a lesson in there for America and how we treat freedom of speech going forward. The other thing that was interesting about the French election is how it now follows on the heels of several other elections in Europe that have rejected right-wing populism. There is a theory going around that the best accomplishment of Donald Trump so far in office is to turn the whole entire world so against someone like Donald Trump and what he represents that it is the election of Donald Trump that has stemmed the tide of right-wing populism around the world. That people look at what America did and say, holy shit, we better not do that. And it has been a wake-up call for the rest of the world. So whatever happens in the future, my listeners can say that David Leventhal has said something good about Donald Trump, so to speak. Well, potentially more good from Donald Trump. The Trump economic success has been trickling down. Not very far down, but it's at least trickling down to the Kushner family. This has been a fun news story. Turns out, basically, that the Kushner family has been using its access to the White House and its political power to make money. Hard to imagine in this administration that there is some self-dealing going on. And in fact, when Jared Kushner's sister was just caught selling access to Jared Kushner to Chinese investors, her response was what it always is. Oh, no, we didn't mean that. Oh, gosh, we're so sorry. It's interesting, in addition about this whole story, the fact that they can actually sell visas. We have a visa program in America that basically allows rich investors to buy their way into the United States. This allows real estate companies to make a lot of money by selling visas issued by the United States government to potential investors for money, lowering return on investments, because what they're really offering is the United States government. So the United States government visa program is helping to further enrich already rich real estate people. Maybe this will lead to a change in the visa program. I wouldn't count on it in less than 4 years. Okay, that's our brief discussion of the news. Now, listener questions. Michael from College Point, New York asks, in a race where 22% of Sanders supporters supported Donald Trump, do you believe that Bernie Sanders helped Hillary lose the election by challenging her excessively? This is a question that many of us have been asking. I think strongly the answer to that particular question is no. I think that Hillary Clinton actually benefited tremendously from running against Bernie Sanders, especially to those of us who were supporters of Bernie Sanders. And what do I mean by that? Bernie Sanders moved Hillary to the left. Bernie Sanders' success showed Hillary that there perhaps was a path to the White House by being a little more progressive, by being less cautious and maybe less corporate friendly. To the extent that she moved to the left and became less corporate friendly, despite all the baggage she had that she couldn't get rid of, I would argue that given the nature of this past election, that would have made her more appealing to most voters. And I would say that any Sanders supporters who voted for Hillary Clinton, which should have been 100% of them, would have done so, as I did, with a much clearer heart because of how much to the left she had moved during the campaign, and the hope that we could have kept her there. But in any case, the whole idea that presidential candidates shouldn't be challenged, or the possibility that she should basically have gotten a coronation, I don't think that would have been good for America. I don't think it would have been good for American democracy, although, of course, I would feel otherwise if it actually would have made a difference and gotten her elected president. But the speculation for most experts is it made her a better candidate, it toughened her up,
and as I indicated, made her move to the left.
Nathan from Flushing asks, is healthcare a human right or a commodity? Why? Why is it different from the other insurance we buy? Home, car, etc. Is healthcare a human right or a commodity? A right or a privilege, as it's spoken of in Republican circles? It's a human right. That's my belief. Unfortunately, I live in America, and that is not the rule in America. That is not the majority opinion. It's not the prevailing opinion. Especially given what they just are trying to do with healthcare, it is clear that they are showing that healthcare is a privilege, and in fact, a privilege available to a select fewer and fewer number of Americans. Clearly, it should be a human right. America, like the rest of the civilized world, should start from the proposition that everybody in America has a right to basic health care. The richest country in the world, it is disgraceful that we would leave people without health care, many of whom, despite Congressman Labrador's statements to the contrary, will die for their lack of health care. As I indicated in a previous show, I don't even understand how wealthy people who vote Republican, there are a lot of wealthy people who are decent and want the best for other people around them. I don't understand how wealthy people who vote Republican can be such heartless animals that they can enjoy a little bit more money having to look around at the damage that it's doing to their fellow citizens. I guess they try not to look, and then they watch Fox News to convince themselves that they really are the good guys. Why is health insurance different from other insurance we buy? And it's treated differently in some respects. Ironically, some of that other insurance we talk about is required. It is mandatory. I use the word mandatory because it sounds like mandate. Individual mandate anybody? This was much of the part of Obamacare that so enraged Republicans. That part, of course, that didn't include taxes on rich people. You are required, if you own a house, but if you have a mortgage, to have insurance for your home. If you drive a car, you are required to have auto insurance. You should be required to have health insurance, especially given the importance of health insurance. It is that much more necessary that people have it. Nathan had followed up in an email with, well, why do we subsidize some and not the other? And I would argue that we should be subsidizing health insurance because it's people's lives at stake. I guess for some of us, we don't have to drive a car. We certainly don't have to drive an expensive car that would run up our insurance rates. But I think we should be subsidizing that as well for poor people. And home insurance, you don't have to own a home. You can rent. It's not necessarily required. But still, we help subsidize people's home insurance by subsidizing their home purchases and allowing them tax deductions. At least in one way, healthcare should be treated more like home or car insurance, and that it should be mandatory for everybody. Okay, that's it for listener questions. Now, moving on to the latest on Russia, including the firing of FBI Director James Comey. Interestingly, the firing of FBI Director James Comey, which is just filling the newspapers today, superseded what was filling the newspapers yesterday, which was the testimony of Sally Yates, the acting attorney general, and James Clapper, the former director of National Intelligence, to the Senate Investigation Committee, which yielded this nugget that's just too good to pass up. This quote from Sally Yates, the acting attorney general, formerly acting attorney general, to state the obvious, You don't want your national security advisor compromised with the Russians. Yes, Ms. Yates, that does seem pretty obvious to most of us. Perhaps not so obvious to some others. There wasn't a whole lot new in the testimony of either Yates or Clapper, but it did focus attention on things that most of us already knew, and I suppose for people who aren't keeping abreast of the story, maybe there were some revelations. One of which, of course, that's made the news is the firing of National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. One of the things that Sally Yates had said and confirmed what we already knew is that the Trump administration says that they fired Michael Flynn because he lied to the vice president. That is a lie. How do we know that? Well, he lied to the vice president almost 3 weeks before he was fired. Acting Attorney General Yates had gone and spoken to the Trump administration and told them that they had information that showed you have a problem here. This man is compromised with Russia because he lied to the vice president. And the Trump administration did not act on it for 18 days until what? As we've indicated before, it was not the lying to the vice president that got Michael Flynn canned. It was the fact that the public became aware of the lying to the vice president about contacts with Russia that forced Trump's hand. He even indicated after the fact how upset he was of the fact that his hand was forced in such a way. Many are going down in the Trump administration, not just Michael Flynn. At this point, it seems pretty obvious that there will be indictments of several people who were intimately involved in the Trump campaign. Paul Manafort, Roger Stone, Carter Page, all look like they are in serious legal trouble. You wonder how an administration that is so upset about people lying about Russia contacts would be keeping all these people on the payroll, would have all these people on the payroll. How is it that this could happen, that the National Security Advisor was someone who was compromised with the Russians, using Sally Yates' term? The most charitable explanation for the Trump administration, and I mean this, the most charitable explanation is that they are so goddamn incompetent that they couldn't do a basic background check on this guy and find out what apparently was pretty well-known information. And all these other guys who were compromised, who were involved with Russia, and who were lying about their connections. The most charitable explanation is that they are so incompetent that they couldn't even get this right. The less charitable explanation, of course, is that this is all part of a broader conspiracy that goes further, whether it goes to President Donald Trump or not. Hopefully someday we will find out. But that it goes further, we know that Jared Kushner has already lied about his contacts with Russia, and who knows what's involved here and what the conspiracy might actually lead us back to. To what extent? We know, of course, that Russia interfered with the election. And we're starting to get a lot of information that they were not alone, that they were helped by people involved with the Trump campaign. Those people hopefully will all go to prison. And if it leads up to the President of the United States, it may even be hard for the Republicans to find a way not to impeach him. The Republicans on the committee, of course, the Senate committee, this was another thing that came out of these hearings with Yates and Clapper. I think the other thing that we learned from these hearings is the questions that the two sides were asking. The Democrats on the committee apparently were concerned about the possible influence of an American election and compromising of an American presidential administration by Russia, a foreign rival. What were the Republicans on the committee worried about? They weren't worried about the fact that the administration may be compromised. No, no. They were worried about the fact that the public knows the administration might have been compromised. In other words, the concern isn't about the crime, it's about the leaking. It's about the whistleblowing, which we've talked about on a prior show. Okay, so now to the firing of James Comey, the FBI director. Is this a big story? Well, I'm sure a lot of people's initial reaction was, well, he wasn't an appointee. He was an Obama appointee. He wasn't a Trump appointee. Trump, the new president, asks people to leave. But that's not the way it works with the FBI director. The FBI director is confirmed to a 10-year term, a term that's long in large part for the purpose of providing some independence from the administration running the country. Is there precedence for a president firing an FBI director? Yes. It happened once. It happened with Bill Clinton. I'm sure you will be hearing Fox News and all the Republicans say, what are you upset about? Clinton did it. Of course, the FBI director at that time, William Sessions, was not investigating Bill Clinton, and in fact was embroiled in several ethical scandals. And there were a lot of information coming out about him being compromised. So by all accounts, the Clinton administration reluctantly had no choice but to ask him to resign. Clearly, the stated reasons for firing FBI Director James Comey are, if I can put this indelicately, bullshit. And where have we heard this before? We fired him because of something that he did 11 months ago regarding Hillary Clinton's emails. 11 months ago, and it dawns on you now to fire him? Or we fired him for the story he leaked right before the election that angered Democrats about the continuing investigation of Clinton's emails, which Donald Trump had already praised his decision to do that, so that one's kind of hard to fly. The lies about why they fired James Comey don't have a lot of legs, in large part because the President of the United States is such a fucking moron that in his letter firing James Comey, he specifically referenced the Russia investigation. Not, gee, I'm firing you because you're investigating me, but I'm firing you, gee, despite the fact that I know you've said some good things about me regarding the Russia investigation, which apparently, by the way, didn't really even say. It says something about the reasons for firing James Comey, that he was fired. Don't tell Fox News, apparently they are running reports that he resigned, or at least had been after it happened. But he did not resign. Normally, that's the process. The president goes to the FBI director and gives it, or whoever else, not the FBI director, but whoever's being fired, and gives them the opportunity to resign rather than be fired. This opportunity was not granted to James Comey. There seems to be a lot of anger there. Why would there be anger? Well, Republican sources seem to be confirming to news sources why the anger is there. And the anger is there because James Comey apparently would not be counted upon to toe the party line. In fact, he was apparently conducting an investigation. The Trump administration didn't want an investigation. They wanted a cover-up. They wanted it to be swept under the rug. James Comey, a Republican, in fact, had been known for his independence. That's why Barack Obama, in part a Democrat, decided to nominate him for head director of the FBI. In fact, Comey's claim to fame was when he was assistant attorney general in the Bush administration under Attorney General John Ashcroft, that when the Republicans wanted the attorney general to sign off on spying that they planned on doing that was against the law, at the time, James Comey was the acting AG because AG Ashcroft was in his hospital bed recuperating from surgery. and apparently in a bit of a stupor. James Comey would not give the permission that the administration wanted, leading to the comical scene of Bush's chief of staff and other members of his inner circle racing to John Ashcroft's hospital bed. In fact, racing James Comey to John Ashcroft's hospital bed to get to the barely sentient Ashcroft to get him to sign off on the policy, which in his one shining moment of life, he wouldn't do. As is clear in the House committee, the Senate committee, the Republicans want their investigators not to investigate, or to investigate leaking, but not something that would actually lead to collusion with Russia. This raises the issue of loyalty, which we've talked about in the past. What does it mean to be a loyal American? What does it mean to be a loyal FBI director? If you are appointed to a high spot in an administration by a president, to whom do you owe your loyalty? I think it's pretty straightforward for most of us. You owe your loyalty to the United States of America and to the people in it. But that is clearly not the way the Republicans see it. If you are in this administration, your loyalty is to Donald Trump and the Republicans, which they use to get Republicans to vote for health care changes. Your loyalty is to them, not to America. You need to understand how bad that is. Democrats, not quite as bad. And that's why Obama named Comey as FBI director, because he could be expected to be independent and do his job to at least a larger extent than the Republicans would allow. No, this seems to be mounting evidence of a criminal conspiracy at high levels of the Trump administration and the Trump transition. As we look for analogies and precedents for this big story, you are all reading about Richard Nixon and the Saturday Night Massacre, where an independent prosecutor was installed to investigate Watergate and the president's role in Watergate. When he started getting too close and not showing his loyalty to the president, but showing his loyalty to the country, Nixon ordered his attorney general to fire him. His attorney general refused and was fired. So the deputy attorney general was ordered to fire him. The deputy attorney general refused and was fired by Nixon. The next in line, number three, stepped up to the plate and was willing to fire the independent prosecutor, Archibald Cox. But that led to such a scandal that it helped bring down the Nixon administration, leading to the famous phrase of how it's not the crime, it's the cover-up. And it may be here as well. In an ironic side note, just quickly, the person who fired the independent prosecutor at the behest of a criminal president to shut down an investigation of criminal activities was a guy by the name of Robert Bork, who subsequently became Ronald Reagan's nominee to the United States Supreme Court, who perhaps in part for this reason and in part because he was certifiably insane and a right-wing extremist, was rejected by the Senate, which the Republicans are still chafing over and still use as an excuse every time they don't do their job, the Senate committee. Well, you did it to Bork. It's funny how these people just never go away forever. When asked about all this, Kellyanne Conway said, oh, who the fuck cares what Kellyanne Conway says? It's being reported in the paper and on the news, but at this point in time, why is anybody reporting on any of this? And in my last statement before we leave today, we will get to the latter segment in our next show. Donald Trump is tweeting about crying Chuck Schumer. Really? Haven't we moved beyond this asininity? This juvenile behavior? Crying Chuck Schumer? Really? I know that appeals to your moron base, but you're speaking to a larger audience now, and it makes you look like a petulant little child. No, you want to start calling names? Let's finish with Bill Maher. If there's a name to be called here, it applies to President Trump. Whiny little bitch. Anyway, that's today's show. Thanks for joining us. As always, please watch us on our website, on YouTube, join us on Facebook, like us, please, if you like us, and listen to us on Podbean, Instagram, all the other places that you can find us. Thanks, as always, for joining in. I look forward to seeing you, so to speak, next week.
You've been listening to Forward Nation Radio with David Leventhal.